It's the American pastime, murdering your boss. And thanks to the iconic trio of Lily Tomlin, Dolly Parton, and Jane Fonda, it was a box office hit when 9 to 5 was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hi, I'm Sean Collier. This is the number one movie in America. I'm here with two Steel Town girls on a Saturday night.
It's actually a Thursday afternoon.
Close enough.
Yes.
Neither of you were born here. Do you still count? We'll figure it out later.
I think so. I mean, Camila at least has been here long enough.
I guess. But
yeah.
I'm more of a Glass City girl.
Okay, and I will always be a Jersey girl. That will never go away.
A Glass City and Jersey girl, respectively, on a Thursday afternoon. It's Camila Adams.
Hello.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Hi there.
Flashdance, it was live. We had an episode. I'm sorry about this noise.
We worked our best through like technical.
Yes.
Not even, I don't want to say difficulties, but surprises or just things that we weren't used to. I mean, it was our first live show.
Yeah. No, and it was what a great subject we got to land on Flashdance. What we did not acknowledge or even notice as I was saying the date is this was a accidental 40th anniversary screening.
Are you kidding me?
It was like, it's like April 1983.
The hand of Tony Goldwyn
is strong and heavy. That's amazing. Look at us.
That's so cool. Yeah. Also, I got to say, like, when my favorite podcasts do live episodes, I never listen to those because of things like the microphone rattle. But it's for the people who were at the event.
Yes.
And thank you so much to everybody who came to the event because it sold out. That was a thrill.
What a thrill.
Yeah.
My mind is blown that it sold out because it's hard to sell tickets for things. So thanks so much to everyone.
And
who
also
came.
Because, like, they had no idea what they're going to watch.
Right.
Like, that's the big thing. So.
Big trust.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Go back and listen to the list. But I felt that there were some when we got to it and we were like, the Lion King's on the wheel, and everyone went, ooh. And then I felt a few where we were like, it could be Training Day. Silence.
Right. It's like, ooh.
I did rewatch Training Day, though. That movie is so good.
So good. I'm sure everyone would have walked out going, you know, that was great.
Yes.
Right. But it wasn't like, you know, I guess you feel like, okay, I'm going to this thing, like a live podcast event, mm-hmm. it's a mystery movie, and then you don't really like in the mindset of, I'm going to watch Training Day.
This meditation on good and evil.
Right.
The other one was when you said Star Trek IV, I felt the crowd go.
And I was like, y'all.
Sure would have been fun.
I maintain that Flashdance was the perfect thing for us to land on, not even knowing the anniversary bit.
Mm-hmm.
If we did watch Star Trek IV, people would enjoy it. That is the Star Trek movie that if you've never seen a minute of Star Trek, you can still enjoy.
I'm sure whatever we landed on, because it was such a good crowd. Thanks to everyone who came out. Thanks to Row House. Mm-hmm. So kind. Apparently all the movies did well, which was my main fear.
Yeah.
Because, you know, our brand isn't that strong. Right. It wouldn't, but apparently everything did well.
It's because we pick good movies.
The ranking was Raiders, Silence of the Lambs, Get Out, Speed, a still healthy but solid last
that
place.
That was the one that I pushed for, so lo siento.
Because I mean, I think Speed was a good choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it still did well for them. It just was no Raiders of the Lost Ark. But what is?
When I was in the bar before I did, it was in the middle of doing the Get Out intro, which by the way was very difficult. I can't believe you do that so often, Sean. It's really hard.
it's awkward because it's one of those things where you have to be a little funny but not very funny and talk for a long time without people laughing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I wasn't funny enough. I should have put more jokes in. Regardless, I was at the bar and there were two dudes on what seemed like a first or second date going to see Speed.
Oh,
they were young, so probably weren't even alive when Speed came out. And the one guy goes, so are you like really into movies? And I was like, this is the cutest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Well, thanks again. I think we'll do it again. I mentioned, you know, they only have so many weeks. I don't know if we're going to get a full week again, but I said we'd love to do an event again. And they promised not only to make that happen, but to buy all of the missing technical components.
All right. Oh,
wow.
Look at that. So look at that. That is a venue.
If you missed it, we will be back. But the somewhat delayed subject this week is a listener's choice. Robin, tell the people.
Well, Camila and I both won a simultaneous bingo. That means we get to do a movie draft. And only one of my movies made it through to the final four, and then it won. And I was like, oh, damn it.
Congratulations.
Yeah. I mean, thank you. Right. But I keep winning these. I don't think I've lost one yet.
Oh. You know what? It's all about the thrill of the chase for me. Like, I don't even really care if mine gets picked. I just like going through the whole process.
Yes. And we'll get to it. But I did watch Lady Sings the Blues, which was the one that I was like kind of the most excited about and knew would come in last place.
Right.
Because a lot of people have never even heard of it.
Right. What's that?
Super interesting movie.
Oh, yeah?
I don't want to say it's good.
Is it better than the United States versus Billie Holiday?
Yeah. So much better, and makes the United States versus Billie Holiday make even less sense as a movie. And that's another example we were talking before we started recording about good performances and bad movies, and great example.
That did not get through. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner did not get through. The Cell made a run. The weirdos came out late in the vote.
And they were like seriously like rallying for it. Because I saw a couple retweets like, hey, my fellow weirdos are whatever. Let's get this movie going.
Always worth watching. But I had not seen 9 to 5.
Was it what you expected?
I hadn't seen it either.
I think I was surprised because it is honestly a little less funny than I thought it would be.
So I've seen this movie several times. And frankly, Scarlett, my all-female comedy troupe, has been talking about doing a live read of this movie because we are also an iconic trio of women.
Yes, yes.
And watching it last night, I was like, oh, we're going to have to punch up some of these jokes.
Yeah.
Or lack of jokes. Like, for live read purposes, is that even allowed?
Right.
I don't know. But anyway, it is less funny than I remembered / expected. And more, I don't like using synonyms of crazy to describe things. But this movie's kind of deranged.
That's
off the rails.
Yeah.
It's like, no, they're thinking about murder. They're very close to just going, if we kill him, though, everyone will be happy.
But they we'll talk about it when we get through the recap. It's not like they start there.
No.
A series of events lead them there.
Yeah.
But it's so, this is my only note, so I'm blowing it before we even get to the segments. It is so prescient. On how people would feel about work 40 years later. Because now we're in this whole, you know, they introduce flex time.
I mean, this is literally Unionize Your Workplace, the movie.
It is. And I mean, those ideas aren't new, but especially since 2020, when everyone is talking about ways to make the workplace more friendly to people and like the work-life balance. It feels so current, and it's 42 years old.
And it's also awesome to see women leading that charge, because it really, and they make a strong case for women to think about these things in a way that men never do, because they're used to having a subservient class to let them have their 9 to 5. So I do like this movie.
I do. No, I like it a lot because it's surprising and fun and not the movie that you think you're getting.
Also, like you said, you just can't deny the three main actors. Right. Like, they're just so good.
Just watch them all day long.
Yeah.
Speaking of the recap, it's my turn. It's Camila's turn.
When you started pointing at me, I was like, no!
I thought it was me for a second, too. And it's like, no, I made one up 2 episodes. No, Mary Poppins. I actually planned it. Yes. And then you...
And Robin was on the spot with flash.
Robin,
Bush.
4 beers in, was made to... spin a recap for Flashdance, but no, here is Camila Adams to tell you what happens in 9 to 5, and go.
It's Judy's first day at her new job, and Violet gives her the rundown. She meets her new boss, Mr. Hart, who is a terrible human being on several different levels. Mr. Hart has spread rumors that he's sleeping with his secretary, Dora Lee, so no one really likes her. Violet has been hoping for a promotion when Hart takes credit for one of her big ideas. Violet loses a promotion to a less qualified man. Dora Lee finds out about the rumors and threatens Hart's manhood. All three ladies end up at the same bar and trade revenge fantasies. movies. Violet accidentally poisons Hart's coffee, but he never drinks it because he falls over in the chair and bumps his head. He goes to the hospital thinking she killed him. Violet steals a body, but it's not his. Hart is fine. The office snitch overhears about the accidental poisoning and tells Hart. He threatens to call the police unless Dora sleeps with him, so they kidnap him. They find out he's been doing other shady stuff at work and start a plan of blackmail, but they have to wait for the proof and hold him for several days. In his absence, they make some much-needed changes in the office culture. Hart's wife returns from vacation, and he gets loose and fixes his problems before they get their proof. Hart is still going to call the police, but is interrupted by a visit from the chairman of the board. He loves the changes, congratulates Hart, and moves him to Brazil. The ladies are thrilled and live wonderful lives.
Perfect. Right on the money. Well done.
And you really covered everything. And it's kind of convoluted. It takes a while to get, like, there's 35 minutes before they hatch their plan or what, mm-hmm. you know, start fantasizing about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of slow to start.
Mm-hmm.
But then that last hour, like, yeah. hold on to your butts.
yeah. It's like, oh, okay, we're on this ride. Let's yeah. go.
I get that some people are committed to their jobs and stuff. Mr. Hart, listen, if I were kidnapped by people who were bringing me food, bringing me reading materials,
leaving the TV for you,
and saying no one's going to notice that you're not at work,
right.
be like, I mean, I might call the police later, but until this wraps up, I'm just like, well, vacation.
I feel right. like
sounds good.
The sex swing that they tie him to is probably the most offensive piece of that kidnapping.
Yeah, because like, yeah, because I when they even go looking for stuff to hold him with, they're like, let's find something more humane. Like, they actually use the words of like really? Like,
but yeah, we're just... Then they grab a dog collar.
Right.
Also, I was very delighted by Chekhov's garage door opener. That's how they suspend him.
Because
Lily Tomlin,
that's right. Yeah, because she
with her when her son's like, "Mom, I'm going to give you a joint." Which, like, what a great son,
right? Yeah. And I love the fact that, and I love the interaction that they had about it too. She
yes.
wasn't like, you know what, you're a bad kid because you do this. She's like, "That's not my thing." And then eventually, mm-hmm. she's like, "Just slip it in my purse."
Yeah, it might be my thing. And then the other thing I want to say: remember we watched Eyes Wide Shut, and I was like, Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise have so clearly never smoked pot. The opposite is true.
Yes. Oh, heavens to Murgatroyd.
For Jane these, and Lily.
These ladies.
At least. I don't know about Dolly Parton, but she's just game. Jane Fonda going, I'll have you know, I happen to smoke pot or whatever she says is so precious. So precious.
Yes.
Well, this was released December 19th of 1980. It did not win that weekend. For some reason, this is the stretch where Box Office Mojo is the most confused about what was happening. This late 70s, early 80s. The number one movie that weekend was either Any Which Way You Can, the Clint Eastwood and a Monkey. I have not seen it.
One of them, right? Aren't there multiple ones?
Yeah, that was a whole cinematic universe. Or Stir Crazy. One of those two was number one that weekend. But 9 to 5 did win the first three weekends of 1981. Earned about $6 million on each of those weekends. A total of $103.2 million.
Wow, that's a big hit.
That's what, like we said for Flashdance, that's a lot of money in 1981. That is about a $350 million movie today. In fact, the number two movie of all released in 1980, behind only The Empire Strikes Back.
Holy shit, I had no idea.
Yeah, I knew it was a hit, but
I think I was surprised to see it on our list.
No, this was certainly, and it's we know why, patriarchy. When we talk about like the iconic 80s comedies,
yeah.
like this is a bigger hit than Caddyshack. This
right.
is a bigger yeah. hit than probably not Beverly Hills Cop or Ghostbusters, but there's so many of those, like, here's two out of three of Chevy Chase, Dan Aykroyd, right. Martin Short, and Steve Martin. Ah, yes, the iconic film we all know. Way more people saw 9 to 5
right.
than yeah. most of those movies. It's just, you know, it's kept... it's kept in a separate category of lady movies. But yeah, giant hit. In addition to dominating these charts, the title song did go to number one. It's not the answer to our question. Don't guess it later.
Okay.
It wasn't until February 21st that 9 to 5 was the number one song in America. Won that week, lost the next 2 weeks to Eddie Rabbit's I Love a Rainy Night.
Okay, I have got a quick aside about this.
About song? I Love a Rainy
yes.
Night?
Okay, so remember burning CDs for your friends?
Yes.
My friend Abby received a burned CD of a mixtape, and something went wrong in ripping that CD or burning that CD. And so I Love a Rainy Night kept having like record skips in mm-hmm. it. And we became obsessed with like that remix in air quotes.
Right, right.
laugh every time I hear that song.
I have to, every couple of months, I go, wait, there's an Eddie Money and an Eddie Rabbit? Those are two different guys.
Who sang similar songs.
Yeah. It's a weird time. 2 weeks of I Love a Rainy Night, 9 to 5 1, an additional weekend on March 14th. It is Dolly Parton's only solo number one.
Stop it.
The other, it's just, I mean, the only two she's credited on are this and Islands in the Stream. Yeah.
What? I mean, she doesn't need to go to number one to be.
I mean, she's a GD national treasure.
Yes.
I mean,
truly.
Absolutely not. All the costumes are at Dolly World. Did you see them?
Well, when I was at Dollywood, the museum was most recently. The first time I went to Dollywood, I did go to the museum. I was not on the lookout for the 9 to 5 costumes. Also, the thing about all the costumes that are in the Dollywood Museum, mm-hmm. her waist mm-hmm. is so small, is Dolly Parton's, that just the busts that the costumes, like the mannequins the costumes are on, are like alarming. And it like distracts from the beauty of the costumes.
That's seeing Pat Benatar's stuff at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
There you go.
Without the busty part.
Yeah.
Right. Pat Benatar's stuff, if someone said, this is for a 10-year-old's dance recital, right. you'd be like, yep. That's right.
Yeah,
small lady.
Kind of the same. I saw Prince's gloves
at
the Rock and Roll Museum. And I was like, what the hell?
How can you be so small with such big energy?
Right.
So the song, big hit. It also led to the renaming of the song Morning Train by Sheena Easton, which was out at the same time, only it was released like 3 months earlier in the UK and called 9 to 5.
Oh my gosh.
The title of the original title of that song is 9 to 5. And then in between the UK and US releases, Dolly Parton's song came out and they said, this song's called Morning Train.
Okay. Well, I think that's a better title, frankly.
Yeah. I don't remember. I don't know what the song is, but.
My baby takes the morning.
I was like, you have to know that song.
Yeah.
Expensive Baubles.
Expensive Baubles.
Okay. 9 to 5 was nominated for Best Original Song. What did it, Fame?
And it lost to Fame, Fame. One of two songs nominated from Fame. Because the other song from Fame is better. What's the other one?
I don't know.
I Sing the Body Electric?
I don't know. I haven't seen Fame since I was young, and it's so upsetting.
Yeah.
Like, we forget because, like, that song is so triumphant, mm-hmm. and the last scene is triumphant, but, like, most of the movie is people suffering.
It's in the Saturday Night Fever category.
Yes, it is exactly like musicals. Saturday Night Fever.
That was the only Oscar nomination. Three nominations at the Golden Globes, and Dolly Parton lost twice. Lost Best Actress in a Comedy or Musical to...
Jane Fonda?
Sissy Spacek in Coal Miner's Daughter.
Oh, musical.
Musical.
I mean, valid.
Yeah, sure. And of all the people, Dolly can't have been mad. It's like, exactly. I lost to Loretta Lynn.
Yes.
It wasn't the first time. Yeah. And this was the waning days of New Star of the Year actress, which Dolly Parton was nominated for, but lost to... Natasha Kinski?
I don't know how to pronounce her name, but that movie, Tess.
Yeah.
Woof. It's so bad. I can't, like, it's just so dry and long. Mm. And I don't like that genre very much.
What genre is that?
Rich People's Problems a long time ago.
Oh,
it's actually the, my family used to be rich, but I am poor.
Mm.
So many of those movies that I tend not to like them.
But that was the Golden Globes, like, you're young and hot award, right? That had very little to do with.
I will say she was good in it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, especially for a model acting for the first time.
Well, Dolly Parton was a songstress acting for
I
the
think
first
being
time.
A songstress is different than being a model That's because true. You talk.
Is she the one that her daughter was in the cult, Nexium?
Natasha Kinski?
Yeah.
I don't think so. Okay. Catherine Oxenberg, is that who you're
That's
thinking
it,
of?
Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
I listen to one of them podcasts. Now I've got a lot of Nexium thoughts.
I know.
I know I'm 9 months late.
Sean drove me home from one of the Row House events and he was like, can we talk about Nexium? And I was like, always.
Yeah. Like, I'm this close to starting a Nexium podcast. Yeah.
Like, how did all of you... Never mind. The song, though, won 2 Grammys. Won Best Country Song and Best Country Vocal Performance Female. Lost Song of the Year to Kim Carnes for Betty Davis
Fair
Eyes.
Enough.
That's a good song.
This is also on 2 AFI lists, 100 Years, 100 Laughs, it is 74, 100 Years, 100 Songs, it is 78. There's a television series and a musical, neither of them are of that much note.
Wasn't somebody who was later more famous in the TV series?
Yes. Rita Moreno was in it, I think, at one point.
She was previously more famous.
Previously more famous.
Well, and once again, I'm so excited that she's going to be in Fast and the Furious.
Rita Moreno's in Fast and the Furious?
The next Fast and the Furious.
I think she's Vin Diesel's mom or grandmother.
Yep.
But I was like,
she's part of the family.
Like, the trailer is 17 minutes long, and I finally, like, after like four iterations, I finally got through it. I'm like, what?
I didn't get through it. And then I had dinner with Regina from Theronathon, and she was like, oh, so we've got another episode coming up. And I was like, what are you talking about? She was like, I can't believe you didn't watch the Fast and Furious trailer. And I was like, I assure you I did, but I guess I lost interest somewhere in those 16 minutes.
Yes, exactly. Like, all I needed, like, I saw, what's his name? Momoa, like, lick a knife. I was like, all right, I'm in. I'll watch it.
Yeah.
And then I stopped.
Theronathon's also behind. We still haven't done Addams Family 2 or Doctor Strange. Spoilers.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I guess if you did episodes for commercials, then a post-credits bump counts. Thoughts on Ant-Man later on. Stick around. Marvels.
Marvels.
I'm now putting this out to the world because I want to know the answer. Rita Moreno.
Yes.
In the days before 80 for Brady was released, mm-hmm. I was watching Singing in the Rain. And Rita Moreno is a build performer in Singing in the Rain, which is surprising because there's...
I don't think I knew she was in it. I've seen that movie.
There's late in the movie, it's... Unfortunately, for a perfect movie, it's the one sequence where you're like, why was this in here? He's like, here's the sequence we're going to have to end the thing. And that leads into the gotta dance fantasy sequence. It's very stagey, but he spends 7 minutes of it dancing with Rita Moreno.
Huh.
A very, you know, probably a 19-year-old Rita Moreno. Huh. So I'm thinking this movie is from 1952.
I want to say 52.
So she's billed, she has billing in that. Clearly she has billing in 80 for Brady. Mm-hmm. That's 71 years between billed performances.
She wasn't billed in West Side Story?
That's West Side Story 61.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's got to be a record, right? I don't know how to Google this.
Robert Duvall, maybe?
I will check that later.
Okay.
A lot of people are like, well, there are child actors who then were still doing things when they were 80.
Right.
But I don't know if those would be billed performances.
Okay.
I thought I had found it with Gloria Stewart, the old lady from Titanic, in Titanic, and The Invisible Man.
Oh, wow.
Those are closer together. That's like 65, 66 years.
So wild.
Okay.
So
man. Wild.
Anyway.
Congrats, Rita.
Yeah. But somebody try to find somebody's name on the title card 75 or more years apart. That's what I'm looking for. Not in the faxy segment. Just a thing I'm thinking about. to answer your question, the television series featured Parton's younger sister, Rachel Dennison, in Parton's role.
It looks a lot like her.
Rita Moreno and Valerie Curtin played the other two.
Okay.
In the second version of the show, because it ran, like, it had a one-year run and then a syndicated run later. And then Rita Moreno left and Sally Struthers took over. So that might be who you're thinking of.
She was previously more famous. That's probably who I was thinking of, though.
That 85 episodes is more significant than the musical. The musical's pretty recent, but it only ran for 4 months.
85 episodes of this show?
Yeah, what?
Wow.
That's a lot.
Not necessarily.
I guess
when
you're syndicated, they used to do like 35 episodes.
Two and a half seasons.
But it's still, yeah.
Well, still. Sequels have been actively developed in the 80s, in the aughts, and in the late 10s. Apparently, Dolly Parton went on Good Morning America or something in 2018 and said, we're doing it, but they've all been dropped.
10 to 6?
No, Jane Fonda had a line. She was like, well, today we'd have to call it 24/7.
Oh, bitch.
Yeah.
She's so good at those things. She's just...
That's, right there. Just,
yeah.
According to IMDb trivia, this is the first female-dominated film. Sounds kinky. Female-dominated film to gross $100 million. Citation needed. I don't know what you're what you're saying. I guess it's like with multiple female leads and no real male lead.
Probably. Like, probably with, like, you know, so they're looking at the cover or the billing, so it's like we got Lily, Jane, and Dolly, and Dabney.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, probably we're looking at fractions and ratios.
You've got charts.
Right. Congratulations. Count that if you want. Finally, guess why Ronald Reagan was angry?
Oh, heavens.
Because he's a dick?
Surprisingly, no. He wrote in his presidential diary, like, Nancy and I watched 9 to 5 today, quite funny, but then he had a long entry about how angry he was about the pot smoking. He said that if they had just gotten drunk in that scene, it would have been great.
Dude.
But he thought it was normalizing pot use for the youth of America.
Oh,
but
my God.
One of the things that I thought about is I was like, is this movie, like, anti-pot? Because Pot is what takes them down the path of fantasizing about murder in a reefer madness kind of way.
I just think it gives them the courage to share those fantasies. Those girls, those fantasies were intricate. They have had those for a long time on sober minds.
Good point. Also, the bit where every time they cut back to reality, they have increasingly ridiculous... Like, they just keep putting paper chains on themselves. Good bit. But
yeah. Yes. Like, who here has not been high and made a paper chain?
I hate to be like, the funniest, the goofiest moment of this comedy is my favorite part, but that sequence is so good.
I remembered that as being, like, a full half hour of this movie. It's only, like, 14 minutes.
Really? I felt long to me.
It is kind of long, but like I thought of that as being like the bulk of the film because it's just so fun and memorable.
Yeah, I guess so.
And it gave me the point of comparison. This is a lot like A Christmas Story in that it's a comedy. Most of it isn't all that funny. It's a little more straightforward than you thought it would be. Mm-hmm. But when they do a fantasy sequence, it's wacky Looney Tunes shit.
Yeah. That is such a good comparison.
This is a better movie than A Christmas Story. But it's around the same time. That is a micro genre. Yeah. The like... amusing movie that occasionally goes wacky.
Right, yeah.
That part early 80s.
Reminded me of a long-form improv set. I just was like, this feels like improv. They're doing a scene, coming back to their base scene, doing another scene.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, yeah. I think probably my favorite parts, bits of her, or anything Lily Tomlin. I think she's probably
so
like,
good.
And mm-hmm. just like her interactions with like, what was it Rosalind or something? Yeah, like when she would just like, just drop like little bullshit. It's like, yes, I know exactly where I'll stick it. And, yes.
But also credit to that actress, Roz. She makes a lot of really funny faces.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like every time an interaction with Lily Tomlin ends, she makes this like kind of weird self-satisfied face because she is an idiot and thinks that she's won that interaction because she doesn't understand the little barbs that Violet is throwing her way.
That is the late Elizabeth Wilson, a Tony Award winner and American Theater Hall of Fame inductee. She wore a Tony for a play called Sticks and Bones. I know I've seen her in other things. Addams Family.
That, I think, is the main thing I recognize.
Quiz Show.
The show or the movie?
The movie. Mm-hmm. She's in Quiz Show. She's she's in The Birds, and her last role was in Hyde Park on Hudson for the 14 people who saw that. So I want to ask both of you, especially comedy professional Robin, it's odd that, and this is throughout the 80s, other than really wacky, other than Three Amigos and shit, a lot of the iconic comedies are kind of low, like, laugh per minute ratios.
Laughs per minute radically changed in the 21st century.
Yeah.
I think The Simpsons, honestly, the first, like, 10 seasons of The Simpsons maybe gets a lot of credit for we got to get as many jokes in every minute as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. And, like, when you watch current sitcoms, like, there is barely any breathing room. And when it does happen, it's always like, all right, let's do some heartstrings pulling or like some relationship stuff. Mm. I just think that we have a different expectation in 2023.
Yeah.
That just makes these striking.
Probably. I just watched a new show with Jane the Virgin.
It's on the top of my Death Hulu wants me to watch it.
Yeah, whatever. But it felt like, and it's a sitcom, but I was expecting, I guess, more of the, like, more laughs per minute, like, kind of thing. It doesn't have a quick thing, and I don't think it's going to be a successful show. But so I guess that's a sense. But also, like, at some point, though, like, because we credit His Girl Friday to, like, what is it, like, the most words said per minute or something like that?
That's true.
And it's not necessarily all comedy, but it is comedy. Like, that.
Oh,
that
absolutely.
Movie, yeah.
Oh, but there's more. In that era, I mean, if you watch Philadelphia Story or any of the screwball comedies, those are way faster at cranking out jokes.
So maybe it was fast in the 30s and 40s, slowed down when we started making 3-hour musicals all the time. And then picked back up, and maybe we're coming into a new phase of slower comedy.
Maybe
that's what you're observing with Jane the Virgin's new show.
Maybe. What is her name? Gina Rodriguez.
There you go.
But yeah, maybe that is. But I would think maybe people are just starting to crack wise to it and like thinking like, now we need to slow it down because the shit's corny. Because yeah. Like a lot of the sitcoms that are like that, like really mm-hmm. beats them a bit is like really, it's corny.
And they're also relying, I can't believe we're going into a long treatise about sitcoms. But really, the jokes per minute speed, I think, depends a lot on cut twos, talking heads, mm-hmm. and that's going to go out of style.
Yeah.
In the same way that three camera situation comedies went out of style.
Maybe it's this, and I'm just pulling this out of my ass right this moment. We don't have a lot of, the big difference is the network sitcoms as opposed to like streaming sitcoms, because they got commercials. You got commercial breaks, mm-hmm. so you're trying to get as many people engaged and to stay there as long yeah. as possible between a commercial break, as opposed to a comedy on Netflix or mm-hmm. on Hulu that has no commercials if you're paying that money for it. Maybe that's something to do with it. Streaming services.
You like the past less than either of us. So are you during 9 to 5? Are you sitting there going like, I'm enjoying this, but it's not that funny?
Yeah. That's yeah. basically it. I was expecting a lot more, just like, yeah, raucous, just like mm-hmm. laughter, like right through it. And I was surprised to know that it wasn't really that. It's not that it's not funny, but the shit wasn't like a Three Amigos kind
yeah.
of
yeah.
situation. Maybe it has something to do with the cast, like Steve Martin, Martin Short, and who was the third guy in Three Amigos?
Chevy.
Kirby?
Chevy Chase. Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You expect that kind of like in your face, like yeah. a comedy all the time, like hitting you over the head from those guys. But like Lily Tomlin, Dolly Parton, we didn't really know. I didn't know what to expect from her.
Yeah.
And Jane Fonda mm-hmm. are a much more subtle breed of comedy. Yeah. And I appreciate that type of comedy.
And it was conceived as a drama.
Like
this was a Jane Fonda project. This is one of the like six films made under her production banner that she started. She wanted to explore workplace inequity and then decided that it was getting too preachy and, nice. You know, on the nose, and was like, let's do a comedy.
That makes sense.
She's so cool. Right? I love Jane Fonda so much.
It's like all three of these women are just like right there, these icons.
Yeah. And I was so impressed. You know, the movies, she won 2 Oscars in the 70s and mm-hmm. for serious movies, and then comes into this and she does all of the great acting techniques.
Mm-hmm.
Like that first 35 minutes, like you believe this is a naive woman
right.
entering the workforce for the first time. And her scenes with her ex-husband, like genuine emotion there. Mm-hmm. But then she hits the comedic beats. I mean, not quite as well as Lily Tomlin, but like right. who is as funny as Lily right. Tomlin? No one. So like, and Dolly Parton just has, you know, the greatest star power ever committed to film. So
you know what? As I was watching her, and I know it's very few movies I've watched Dolly Parton in, I was thinking how classy her Southern drawl is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, because a lot of times a Southern drawl can be really jarring. But.
So my hairstylist is from the same part of Tennessee that she is. And she sounds like Dolly Parton. And that's part of the reason I love her so much.
The only problem with her star power and how hot she is in 1980, when it's presented that he's telling the office he's sleeping with her, I'm like, that's a self-correcting problem because no one alive would believe that. No one is buying that. Even then, with the workplace politics and the secretary, no one is buying that for a minute. And then when we see her husband, I'm like, no, not there either. Nope. Absolutely not.
No, there's no way. Like her husband was, that wasn't a good match. I don't know what they were trying to do. But I also want to give Dabney Coleman a little bit of credit for
her
in her fantasy. When the tables are turned and he becomes like, you know, the aggressor, the one that's being assaulted. And he just, there's a moment like he just gets this like little childless look on his face. He's like all red and he's like, oh, thank you. And you're like, oh. It's just like, it's really great. I love to see the juxtaposition like just like that in the same movie.
Yeah. Also, shout out to the moment where she lassos the frame for mm-hmm. a frame swiping edit.
Right, yeah. And also, my thought was, that's not the first time Dolly has lassoed a man.
Amen.
Apparently, her secret husband, you know how she's been married to the...
I don't think it's a secret.
No, it's not a secret. It's that he never is around.
Yeah.
He's kind of reclusive and never... Apparently, he was on the... He like quietly walked onto the set one day. And Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin were like, oh, there's a good looking guy. He's mine. And Dolly had to be like, actually.
I thought Lily only likes the company of women.
Oh, really? Yeah, but just chatting.
Okay, all right.
Chatting, you know.
She might be a bisexual. Who knows?
Yeah, I didn't know that about Lily. And I also didn't know that about Dolly, but I always did wonder, like, is Dolly married? But it never really got mm-hmm. past that question.
Well, she talks Nicole, about him.
Yes, I've heard her talk about him, but I also just have it as a fact in my head that no one ever sees
right.
him.
And one of the things she talks about is, like, he's going to live his life separate from my ridiculousness.
I love it. I absolutely love that.
Beautiful. Dabney Coleman is still with us. Just wanted to
good
know.
Job. Good. I don't think I knew that.
I think I saw him, like, kind of old and decrepit on something, like maybe a Law & Order episode or something.
He was on Boardwalk Empire for a while, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, 91. Good for him. I didn't write down a number. As much as I'm like, great, good times, I don't really know how to score it. Because
you want me to start?
Yeah.
I got a number, which is 78.
Mm.
I think, like, in my heart, this movie's like a 90.
Oh,
but,
really?
Like, watching it again, I'm like, okay, no, this movie could be better as a movie. It just is, but it's also great and iconic.
Yeah. I am going to go with, because I didn't write down a number either. I'll say 75 as a movie. It could have been better, but I like the hearing what you said about how Jane Fonda went to approach it and mm-hmm. then decided to, like, okay, we're going to lighten it up a pinch, and what she wanted to get across. And like, I enjoyed the message that was coming across on it. And who hasn't thought about
who among us
putting hands on a boss?
When I was stammering, the number that floated into my head was also 75. So we almost have a Get Out here. A 78, 75, and 75. That is an average of 76. Whoops, segments, we have them. The trailer.
20th Century Fox presents a tribute to anyone who has ever been overworked, underpaid, and pushed to the edge by an ungrateful boss. They arrive promptly at 9, because if they're not on time, they know they'll get the sack. But before they begin the daily grind, the boss takes his cup black. They remember each date, make sure he's not late, and keep everything organized. They reserve tables for brunch or a 3-martini lunch while they dine on burgers and fries.
Miss Rhodes!
They listen to all his problems. They do their best to please. And even if they run the show, he gets paid for their ideas.
Great work.
And so long as he's alive, from 9 to 5, they'll take it all they can.
Miss Rhodes, come in here.
But what will go on when the light finally dawns that it's time to get back at that man?
Miss Rhodes!
Jane Fonda, Lily Tomlin, and Dolly Parton. 9 to 5.
So the song wasn't done yet, right? I can't believe that the song isn't in the trailer. It's one of those, a movie about the workplace, and it's almost all like stock footage. It's like someone making coffee, someone typing, you know, but it doesn't have the song.
The main reaction I had to the trailer was, where is my dun 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 dun?
I know. I would watch anything. If that were on the Transformers movie, I'd be like, I'm going.
Yeah.
it's like, yes, this song is perfect.
On my most recent trip to Dollywood, I got a coffee cup that said, poured myself a cup of ambition.
Oh.
Nice. And what's funny is that I called it, like, before I play, I was like, this movie is going to start with the song.
Why would you not?
Which makes it weird that it's not in the trailer. It's fine. The Letterboxd list is just called Good for Her.
Good for her.
Films include Jennifer's Body, Kill Bill, Enough, Thelma and Louise, Midsommar, Birds of Prey. And then I'm scrolling down and it's like Jurassic Park. I'm like, why is Jurassic Park?
Blue?
All the dinosaurs are girls.
Yes.
Oh!
Good for her.
Good for her.
And also, like, and to tag on that, the lady, the drunk in there who was watching them. Good, and what did she say? Good for her.
Yeah.
You go.
But it's just like, that's great. Yeah.
Right.
And then they solve her alcoholism.
Right. Wonderful. Beautiful scenario on the bingo card.
Song from the 80s, please.
Absolutely on there. Also, packages delivered.
Yes.
Takes a while. They finally get the documents that prove
bingo.
The...
Ooh.
That's a bingo.
Hey!
Camila, yay! You got two vetoes.
All right.
And thanks to Robin, this is not for you, it's for us. But mm-hmm. Robin actually wrote down all the rules for what happens when who gets a veto and how. So now we won't have that part of the show where we go, what do we do when this happens? How many did you? What did we? It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. I don't know how required Ant-Man thoughts are at this point.
I would be interested to know your general.
Yeah.
My general reaction is this is a very average movie. There are parts of it that worked and were fun. Early on, it's actually very clearly like a Star Wars riff. Because they go down to the quantum realm and there's all these weird creatures and they're going into weird bars and it's very like we're the travelers trying to figure out and navigate, and that's good. And Jonathan Majors is great. I'm fully on board with making him the new Thanos.
Right.
Like, sure, come back all the time. You know, be in the next seven of these. That sounds great. And in the middle, it's just kind of a slog. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of, we're stuck and he wants a thing from them and they don't want to, and that like eats up an hour. You know, some people are great. You know, Paul Rudd kind of can't not be charming.
Right.
There's a few semi-surprise performances that I guess I won't reveal that really worked. Evangeline Lilly and Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer never like raised their eyebrows in this movie. Like, could not. Could not be less concerned.
Wow.
With, because it's other than like a scene at the beginning and the scene at the end, it's all in the quantum realm, right? Mm. So that means they're just walking around the same big green room for a month. And you can tell that they're like,
if only they had filmed this after Angela Bassett was getting Oscar buzz and then a nomination for Wakanda Forever.
Right.
Michelle Pfeiffer might have been like, this is my path.
Right. Yes. Exactly. Right. But at this point, like, Michael Douglas is like, why did I let them talk me into this? Yeah.
It's like seven of these. God. So it's fine. This might be the first-ish time I vote rotten on a Marvel.
Oh.
Just because I'm like, I'm sorry, you're going to have to bring more than that now. Yeah. Like, you've built my expectations up so much, and you're churning out so much content that's usually pretty good to great, that if then you're like, this one too, and I'm like... I don't know. I got sleepy in the middle. Like, that's the, if you're going to do that, I'll just wait for the next one, which is in a week.
Yeah.
You right. know? So if you want to see it, fine. This is.
If you're a completist.
Every yeah, week on the every week on the radio, they say, this is why you're never on the poster.
If you want to see it, fine. Sean Collier.
It is skippable. It is definitely one of those cases where the post-credit scenes are more impactful and more relevant to what you want to know than anything that happens before it. But Jonathan Majors is great. Other than that, you know, Magic Mike's Last Dance was fun. If you feel like doing that with your time.
Yeah, apparently I'm going to see that this weekend.
Group
of my lady friends were like, hey, we're doing this. And I was like...
Girls' night out. Good girls' night out.
Yeah. It's like, I'm there more for the company than I am for the actual movie because I wasn't really interested to see it.
Selma Hayek's the main character.
Oh, love it.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Like, it is clearly her story.
Excuse me. Selma Hayek. Pino or whatever.
Whatever her third name is. Yeah. It is on the screen.
She has a third name now?
They said it out loud. Like, in the trailer, they're like, Channing Tatum, Salma Hayek, whatever her last name is.
Right. So I have no idea why Soderbergh came back for this one, but you can tell on the dance sequences. Like,
because they're not as good?
No, they're great.
I'll die mad at him. I'll never forgive you, Steven Soderbergh.
I know.
What?
The Oscar
for the Oscars.
Thing.
And, oh,
yeah.
Penult.
Yeah.
Selma Hayek, Penult.
I mean, we're all just biding time because Cocaine Bear is in a week.
I don't care. I feel so left out because I'm like,
You and me are on that outside together. Because every time I hear him, I'm just like... I become less and less interested.
Similarly, I never saw Snakes on a Plane.
Me either.
Because I was like, this seems like a meme and not a movie, and I don't need an hour and a half of my life to go to something that could be a single frame that I scroll past on Twitter.
I just like having a good time in there. Oh, I guess we haven't talked about Knock at the Cabin. Have we not talked about Knock at the Cabin?
No.
Did you see it?
Uh-uh.
Listen, this is
and
the...
And I don't know how likely I am to M. Night.
Yeah, I'm no interest in this.
It's the best of his bad movies. But it's
what does that mean?
Sean Collier, Pittsburgh Magazine.
What it means is it's not very good. It's watchable. Mm. And it's, unlike most of them, I didn't find a way in which it was actively offensive. Like,
okay,
how I get mad at The Visit because it's about how old people might kill you, and about The Split because it's about how mentally ill people might kill you.
Also about how old people might kill you.
Yeah, but That had soul.
Okay. let's say that had Mia Goth. Her lack of eyebrows.
That's my number two movie of the year. I feel I have defended it enough. We'll get back into it when Maxine comes out. I like most movies, I swear. It has its moments. The cast is pretty good. Dave Bautista is great. I'm enjoying the new narrative that he's the best wrestler turned actor, which might be true.
I don't have a lot of info on that.
I think I still like John Cena the most. He's not really an actor. He's more of a great comedic performer.
Yeah.
I think he is very funny.
The one thing about Nog, and this is why it's still a bad movie, really like falls apart in the last half hour and goes to like kind of the least interesting ending you could pick. And so I walk outside and pull up the summary of the book on Wikipedia because it's based on a book.
Oh, yeah.
And way better. I'm like, what happened here?
The book ending is way better.
Everyone liked the book. So then there was a script on the blacklist, not by M. Night. Two guys wrote a script from it. Everybody liked that. He got it and rewrote the thing.
Damn
like,
it.
Shut
Don't
up.
Don't worry, right. darling style. We got to like contact that guy who runs the blacklist and be like, you have to stop this somehow.
Right. Exactly. It's like it was on there for a reason. Like, leave it alone.
Yes.
Do not let anybody else touch this shit.
Am I recommending anything? Hey, you know when you want to watch a goofy 80s horror movie that just you want it to hit the sweet spot? Watch Death Spa. You have to watch Death Spa. There's this spa and people keep dying. What more do you there's great exercise montages and workout gear and everybody's in the shower and then it gets weird and creepy and a little gory and it has the best high five ever put on film.
Wow. High praise.
It's on Shudder now. That's my recommendation. Watch Death Spa. Camila?
I don't really even have any recommendations. I watched Selena Gomez's My Mind and Me. It was very fine.
I think you mentioned that last episode.
Did I? Okay.
it's been a minute since you watched movies.
Did I talk about the Lazarus Effect?
I don't think so. What?
Which one's that? Is that a found footage?
No, that's from like 2015. It was mentioned in something I was reading and I decided to go watch it. A group of scientists figure out how to bring people back from the dead.
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
Yeah.
It was fine.
Yeah, it wasn't as bad as I was anticipating it to be. Is that Olivia Wilde?
Yeah, an early Blumhouse.
Yes.
Deal.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Olivia Wilde, Evan Peters.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong. I mean, it wasn't like a run out and watch this, but
right,
it was
fine. Mark Duplass and Donald Glover.
Good, relatively
strong cast, and it's like 90 minutes, so it's like it like really they get in, they get out, and it has a couple scares in there. It's not a bet, so I would suggest it for one of those, like, you know, I just want like a quick kind of horror type thing just to put on, and it's like a freebie. I think it's on Netflix or something, or maybe Amazon Prime. Totally worth it. Have I talked about You People?
No,
us two specifically.
with Jonah Hill.
Oh,
and Eddie
God.
Murphy.
Okay, Colin and I turned that on, and we couldn't get more than 15 minutes into it.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Like, first of
and
all.
And I was curious if you were going to watch it.
Yeah. I mean.
As a black lady married to a Jewish man.
Yes. So I was like, you know what? Maybe this
right.
is. First of all, there's in no world is Lauren London dating Jonah Hill.
I mean, listen,
he ain't that funny.
Okay.
He would be, we hang out, you'd be my movie buddy. Sure. We can go buy sneakers together. But this, other than that, and then secondly, Nia Long is in it. They give
what?
Her nothing to do.
I don't think I even made it to Nia
She's
Long.
She's her mom.
Oh,
she's Eddie Murphy's wife. Like, give her nothing to
Nia
do.
Nia Long
like,
has eternally deserved better.
Right.
What did I just see her in that was the same situation?
And then...
I mean, in the last 6 months, I saw her in something and was like, it was good to see her, but...
Right. Yeah, it's like she stopped by. I was like, hey, how you doing? I'm still here.
I'll take this paycheck.
Right, yeah. Eddie Murphy, like, the characters were all very, like, two-dimensional. It was just, like, flat. Like, you just... There was too much that you just were like, there's no way... This is a real person.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way they would make these choices. Like, it's just ridiculous. So I would absolutely skip it. I think the best thing about it that I can say is David Duchovny, upon meeting his son's black girlfriend for the first time, he decides to sit down at the piano and sing John Legend to her. And he can't stop talking about Exhibit's braids. So
Oy.
That is the funniest thing.
One thing I appreciated in the first 10 minutes of the movie was a positive depiction of podcasting.
Yes.
Which is very nice. Rare to find.
Right, yeah.
We all saw Halloween 2018. It didn't go too well for me. Actually, she was pretty good. It was Missing. That came out a few weeks ago.
When is that going to stream?
The latest entirely on your computer screen. Oh, horror
sure,
movie.
Sure, sure.
And she's the mom with secrets, and she is pretty good. Yeah. That's a wait for streaming.
I will
absolutely
watch that movie when it hits streaming.
But she's pretty good in it. Robin?
Okay, so I'm in the midst of the Oscars death race. I did watch some rough stuff. Starting with Blonde.
So you hadn't watched it prior to
No, I was interested in it, but then when I read the initial reviews, I was like, never mind.
Right.
And when they said Ana de Armas' name in the nominations announcement, I was like, God damn. That movie is a nightmare.
Yeah, fuck that guy. I forget his name, and I also don't want to dignify him by saying it.
Yeah, it's
fuck
just
that guy.
Really badly done, and there are some moments that work. Adrian Brody is really good as Arthur Miller.
I love Adrian Brody in anything.
Yeah, he's so good, and he's also outrageously hot. The one scene where they meet, he sees her at a reading of one of his plays, and he freaks. He's like, oh, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. And then in the course of her reading it, he's like, wait a second. And then they have lunch together, and she's like, this is my read on this play. And he's like, I'm in love with you. And it's truly great chemistry, great scene. Because I was so, it's an interesting bad movie. Mm. I remembered vaguely the TV miniseries adaptation of this. Mm. Saw it was on Tubi, and I was like, all right, I'm watching it. Patrick Dempsey plays Cass Chaplin. The guy from Supernatural plays the other person in the thruple. The scenes are, like, the dialogue is directly the same.
Oh, wow.
And
wow.
The scene progression, and this is a 700-page book. So I think that this guy who wrote Blonde was literally ripping off this TV miniseries. I know that an adaptation, it's not a bulletproof case, but I'm like, this is striking how similar these two things are. When one is a 20-year-old TV network television miniseries, right, and one is a NC-17 streaming movie.
I'm going to assume that the miniseries doesn't have a CGI fetus begging Marilyn Monroe not to abort it.
Correct.
Stop it.
Yeah. It's good. So bad. Okay. And then speaking of bad movies.
I stand by my Letterboxd review of Blonde, which was, would backhand the director with the fuck is wrong with you if given the opportunity.
So speaking of what the fuck is wrong with you, I also watched The Whale.
Yeah.
And I kept, like, it was just like every day it was like, is today the day I do this to myself? And then one day I was like, Colin, it's time. I do think that Brendan Fraser and Hong Chau were great. Mm-hmm. And I think, mm-hmm, and I'm glad they got those Oscar nominations. Right. Partially, like, everybody loves, I love Brendan Fraser. Mm-hmm. Right. And then with Hong Chau, part of the reason I love that she got that is Downsizing is one of those examples of a movie I saw because it had Oscar buzz and I didn't think it was going to make it to rentable between the nominations and the thing. And then she had Oscar buzz for that. And then she didn't get the nomination. And I'm like, this makes this.
You saw Downsizing for no goddamn reason.
Correct. Yeah. And that movie is a mess. And I was like, this is a band-aid for getting this nomination on that chip out of my soul. So they were great. I thought Sadie Sink was bad. I know that you thought she was good.
I thought she was good, but I also was excited to meet her 2 months ago. So
right,
great on a curve.
And then I also thought the kid from Iron Man 3, who I did not recognize as the kid from Iron Man 3, was bad.
He wasn't
very
good.
That's who that was?
Yeah. Yeah.
With the little Mormon boy?
Correct.
Really?
Yes. He grew out of his child face.
He sure did.
Into a very blandly handsome face, which, like, that's not the best thing to have in the movies.
No.
So the thing about this movie is, it's just deeply hateful, as we've discussed. Mm. Particularly the scene where he's binge eating and they're playing like horror music.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is awful. Mm. Just deeply cruel.
Yeah.
But Brendan Fraser and I think also Hong Chau have been saying in interviews and stuff, like, this is a film about empathy. And then they have things like the pizza delivery guy being like, hey, what's your name?
Right.
Right? Like,
or you think that's going to be a nice shiny little moment when he, like, you know, makes a friend or something.
Right.
Or the moment of empathy.
Yes, like, correct. And but all of that gets brushed aside like so quickly for more hatefulness.
The pizza guy sees him and is like, ugh.
Yeah.
And listen, and this is why I'll be mad if it wins the makeup Oscar.
Well, they cheated.
He wasn't that awful to look at. Like, no. in the movie. Like, he's a very big guy.
Right.
I'll see somebody on the street in the next 2 weeks that looks worse. Right. And so doing the whole like, look at this monster is like, no, he's just big.
Right.
He's just kind of a normal looking big guy.
Right. I mean, are you arguing they should have made it more of an extreme fat suit?
No, I'm arguing that it shouldn't be hateful because the movie isn't about him being fat.
Right.
But if you're going to have the pizza guy recoil in horror,
right,
he should look a little weirder.
The other thing that was troubling to me about it, like, listen, I am into fat acceptance. I listen to Maintenance Phase, all that stuff. But in addition to it being so deeply anti-fat, it's also anti-disability. Like, it's ableist,
yeah,
right? This whole thing, like, look how long it takes him to stand up.
I'm right, like, yeah.
That's true for thin people, too.
Yeah.
Like, and something I say all the time when people are making fun of other people's bodies and their lack of ability is I'm like, enjoy being able-bodied while it lasts,
right?
Because it doesn't last forever.
Right.
Yeah. It just, it was so hateful. I keep saying the word because it's really the only thing that I think can think of to describe it. But secondarily, I was mad because it's such a filmed play. It is such a filmed play. It's so visually uninteresting.
Yeah.
And Darren Aronofsky, I can't believe that director, who I typically love, made such a visually boring movie. And the only explanation I can come up with is that he was so like giddy about getting to put this guy in a fat suit that he was like, that's the visually interesting part.
Maybe.
How grotesque this man is. And that's just awful. And then, like you said, I don't think it should win the makeup Oscar because there were parts where it was like, okay, they clearly use CGI. Like they are blurring the edges of their fat suit. And I personally think that Oscar is for practical makeup and hairstyling. Yeah.
Should have been X. Had no idea they weren't old people.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
How many more of these will it take before you admit that I was right about Mother?
I never.
Oh, great.
I will always love Mother.
Okay. Anything else?
Oh, I watched RRR.
Okay.
That's a fun movie. To quote my friend Chris Maxwell, at the end of it, you go, did I just watch a fascism? And then additionally, it's like, you know, I don't know things about Indian history, but my understanding is that this movie, like, they just kind of use those air quotes characters. It's like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
What's the name of that web comic? I forget it now, but it's the comic is an image of like George Washington killing Hitler with a spear, and it's a movie theater 300 years from now with the movie World War II.
Yes, yes, exactly like that. And it's interesting on a certain level. It's very interesting to watch another country's Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Right.
So I did enjoy watching it quite a bit. I think it would have been goofy if it got nominated for Best Picture. It's not very good. It's like, it reminded me of watching Los Angeles, which I enjoyed so much.
Yeah.
Right? That's a really fun movie. It's Best Picture.
I should have watched RRR. It was nominated for like 8 Critics' Choice Awards.
Yeah.
And I kept being like, I don't
including Best Picture.
I don't have 3.5 hours today.
Yeah. Oh, I also watched, speaking of which, All Quiet on the Western Front. Snore.
That is the one where while I was waiting for a plane to take off, I was like, you can download movies on Netflix, right? Maybe I'll download All Quiet on the Western Front, and between this flight and next, just knock it out. That didn't happen. I mostly took a little nap.
The main thing about All Quiet on the Western Front is that the original is so good and holds up so well for a movie that's 100 years old almost, and or maybe really? No, it's not. It's from the 30s. Regardless, I'm like, it's embarrassing to me that you remade this with 90 years of advanced in filmmaking and also with permission to be more gory, and you made a worse movie. That's I'm like, that's embarrassing. You should be embarrassed.
So you would not recommend it in your for people doing an Oscars catch up? Nominated all
I
over the
place. I think everybody should watch everything that's nominated for Best Picture, but I am demented.
If you skip one Best Picture nominee, skip...
Well, I still haven't seen Top Gun Maverick, but...
No, watch that one.
I would say watch Tar before this.
Mm.
Tar's at least interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah.
All right. let's draw a movie. Just normal type. Just the regular thing that we do. With the the caveat.
No wheel, no poles.
The caveat that Camila has two vetoes, so, you know. Well, that's interesting. Mm. Robin, before you go there and watch Top Gun Maverick, do you want to watch Top Gun? Because that's what we landed on.
I do, actually.
That's insane.
And perfect for what? It's 4 weeks from Oscar now. So it'll be like 1 week from the a week or two from the Oscars when that comes out. What a good tie-in.
That's crazy.
Another Best Original Song winner.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tony.
I am interested in how I feel because I think I've seen this twice and both times walked out going, no, that's not very good.
Oh, it's bad. It is an actively bad movie that is also kind of undeniable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think after Maverick, which I didn't love Maverick, but I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
And that made me feel better about the original Top Gun because I'm like, oh, it's about the sky and vibes. Yeah. It's not about
the sky and vibes.
Anything other than like masculinity and motorcycles and 80s music. That's the entire thing here. So I'm interested to see if I'll like it more. Have you two seen this a lot? Or
I saw it once while I was in the hospital doped up on morphine.
That's maybe the best time to see it. Yeah. You're like, volleyball.
I don't remember anything about it other than, yes, I remember waking up, like, is this Top Gun?
My best friend in grade school, shout out to Rachel Vassar, loved Tom Cruise. And so this was a frequent sleepover. VHS, boom. Wait, can we do a quick plug? Camila and I will be appearing on Bracket Night on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, the Friday after the Oscars, to argue for and vote on the best picture loser.
So this will be interesting.
Yes. And this is fun because it means that all possible permutations of Nomia, as Katie put it.
We were saying we need to get all three of us there.
Right.
And she says it's on her vision board for the year.
Robin and I did one, then Camila and I did one, and we should have known that we couldn't possibly...
All
without the two of you and not me being there first.
Right.
So that's great.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. And I will be wearing a really cool outfit. So.
I love that show.
Yeah.
That's what
you're saving.
It's kind of.
Also, the night before the Oscars, 311, my 90s themed troupe, the Latchkey Kids, has the Latchkey Kids Goes to the Oscars. So that's where I will be debuting my really fun outfit.
This is exciting.
Yeah.
I briefly thought you had renamed your 90s themed troupe 311, which would have made sense. But that's the date.
When we got offered 311, for a show, we were like, this is fate.
Has to be done. I love Bracket Night. It's hard to get me out of the house recreationally anymore. I'm just too busy. That's one of the only ones where I'm like, I think I'm going to go.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's a very good time. Well, that and then Top Gun. I have half a mind to watch Maverick again just to like maybe like on consecutive days to like really feel the arc.
Also want to help you with your ballot. You know, like, is this really the best sound?
It could still win Best Picture.
I can't believe that Tom Cruise isn't walking straight to an Oscar for this. I assume he's a producer. So, but as Best Actor, because of the parallel with The Color of Money and because they want to give Tom Cruise an Oscar and also like, frankly, it's a weak field, Best Actor.
Do you hear that news item that came out that at one of the dinners or whatever, Spielberg, when he thought no one could hear him, leaned over to Tom Cruise and said, your movie is the only reason that movie theaters still exist.
Well, he's right.
Saved.
And then that's the other reason that it could do better. Like you said, it could win Best Picture because the movie industry is like, thank you, Tom Cruise.
Before we get to the danger zone, before we're even on the highway to the danger zone, which is you got to take to get there, you see, 9 to 5 started 1981 as the number one movie in America. What was the first?
Wait, 9 to 5 was in 81.
It was released in 80, but it was the number one movie in America.
'81.
As 81 kicked off. So what was the first number one song of 1981?
I was going to guess Betty Davis Eyes. Nope. But then you said it in your thing, and I'm like, he would have admitted that fact. Mm-hmm. So
Xanadu?
No, good guess. Love Xanadu. R.I.P. That John Travolta Super Bowl commercial, I guess he was like, this was as a tribute to her. I'm just watching and thinking, yeah, this would be a lot better if she were there. I wouldn't. He did one of those, whatever fucking Zach Braff and Scrubs Man are whatever.
Zach Braff is Scrubs Man.
No, the other one.
Oh, the, like, the creator.
Donald Faison. Oh, okay. Whatever they're selling, they did another one of those, only it was with John Travolta singing Summer Nights.
Oh.
Yeah, no, that was just going to make you feel the absence.
And I'm like, well, yes. Someone's missing here, and it's because she just died. Like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, shame.
Poor taste.
None of these people are involved in the first number one song in America of 1981.
Jackson.
No.
Lionel Richie.
Your first hint is this is a posthumous winner.
They were dead when
mm-hmm.
they won?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, geez, I'll never guess it.
I also, I don't know. I need more hints.
Everything about this is sad. this is a very downer note to end the episode, but great. I couldn't. Not only is it a posthumous winner, it's pretty much number one because of the death. Who died toward the end of 1980?
I don't know.
It feels like this person died earlier, but I assure you it was 1980, and it is, you know, probably the most important musician death for 10 years in either direction.
Louis what? Armstrong.
No, someone died taken too
Frank
soon.
Sinatra, no, he was
taken
he
far
made it in the 90s.
Taken
yeah.
far too soon. Taken violently
oh,
far
Lennon.
So there you
John
go.
Lennon. Oh, of course.
I guess Imagine?
No.
No.
Much like Morning Train parentheses 9 to 5, this does
Instant
have
Karma
parentheses in the title. No. Everyone's just thinking about John Lennon songs.
Yeah.
It's parentheses just like Starting Over.
I'm out.
I don't know.
Just like Starting Over?
Mm-mm.
Mm.
That's the name of the song? I'm just telling you the name of the song now?
No,
wait, the song is in parentheses?
No, just like is in parentheses.
Oh,
starting over. Yeah.
People abuse parentheses in titles. I actually think Birdman is a decent, like, I think that's a pretty good movie. I was not upset about Birdman mm-hmm. winning Best Picture. I will die upset about the nonsense words.
Or the unexpected virtue of ignorance?
Yeah.
There was some item from that came in like a big cardboard envelope with the quote from the movie, popularity is the slutty little cousin of prestige. And I put that on my wall for like 6 years because I'm like, that's important to remember.
Yes.
Number